Here's Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. We always enjoy our conversations with Fitz. I don't know how enjoyable this period of time is for K-State fans. You have a better feel than I do. I did put out on my Twitter the other night to say what one word describes the K-State football season, and they were all kind of disappointing and negative terms. What about K-State Nation? You think that's the way pretty much everyone feels?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way the season ended, the 8-4 record is one thing, because I think that was a little bit under expectations this season, and you're always measured against those. But it was the 1-3 finish. I mean, to lose three of your last four, blow a chance to play for the Big 12 championship. You know, so it wasn't just a matter of you win 8-4. You had everything you wanted in play at the 2/3 mark of your season, and it all slipped away. So I think there is disappointment. And I know Chris Klieman was a little bit defensive in his post-game press conference, you know, talking about how 8 wins, people shouldn't look badly upon that. But he's got to be disappointed too. I mean, they were in a good position and things just kind of came apart.
What do you think happened from I don't want to call it necessarily an effort. You don't really ever want to question guys' effort, but it just seemed like there was something emotionally missing over the last month where you couldn't really see what this team really did to be 7-1. It just seemed to really fall off, obviously, from a physical standpoint, but was there something missing emotionally from this team?
Yeah, I don't think they ever really played with a whole lot of fire. I think they played with effort at times. I thought they were really good at Colorado. I thought they were fairly focused with Cincinnati. I thought they played hard at Iowa State. They didn't play well, but they played hard. They made too many mistakes. And I just don't think this team had enough, and I mean this in a good sense, instigators in that locker room, guys that were going to push their teammates and get them to, you know, really get fired up and motivated for games. I think they had a sense of going about business, and they got too casual at times. They were certainly too casual at Houston. And then they made some mistakes based on, you know, whether it was a bad play call or bad execution by the players. It still was a game-changing mistake, just as the very first play from scrimmage at Iowa State was.
Talking with Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com is his publication. You can subscribe to that. Go to GoPowerCat.com. If you're a K-State fan who hasn't already subscribed, and I can't imagine there are that many. So where are we as we head into a bowl game? This is going to be a strange time, maybe even stranger than normal because of the transfer portal, because of the draft, because of players player movement and coach movement. We've already seen a little bit of it. Talk about it nationally first, and then how do you think it could affect K-State?
Well, there's another layer here. I mean, we have the house settlement coming up next year in which, you know, all student-athletes will have a revenue-sharing program in place at their schools. And the general thought around college athletics is that's going to affect NIL. And, you know, those NIL numbers might drop a little bit, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I think some programs are going to invest heavily in NIL to get guys to their campuses when the new rules go into place. And I think we're going to see a lot of movement this offseason. If it's, you know, whether it's players moving up or players losing their roster spots, which is the next step, we're going to see a lot of players put into the portal, basically, by their programs that they're playing for. So if it's players coming back down the ladder, I think we're going to see an awful lot of movement. And these are really uncertain times in college athletics. And I think all of us old men harken back to better days. I'm certainly not against the NIL. I'm not against the transfer portal. I just think the NCAA has done a horrific job of setting up guide rails and trying to guide programs through this since created a Wild West.
Yeah, everybody talks about the NIL and the transfer portal. I can probably wrap my head around those things a lot easier. The thing I hate about big-time college sports is recruiting, and it looks like Lincoln Cure might go to Oregon now, and I just don't. Yep. I just don't get it. I don't like this. I don't. You commit to a school, and then a day, 2 days before signing day, you're talking about, well, I love Oregon, and really had a great time at Oregon. It's like, what is the point? And we don't know what he's going to do Wednesday. He says, well, both outcomes are possible. It's like, who are you? You're a great player, everything. You're a five-star guy. But do we need to beg you to come to Kansas State? Does Oregon need to beg you to come? It's like, I don't know. It seems like these kids just take themselves so seriously. Just make a decision.
Yeah, recruiting is just a big fanfare. You know, they treat you like you're $1 million. They say whatever they need to say to get you to sway their opinion. They make you offers. They do stuff they probably shouldn't do. And I know that's certainly happened with, in the transfer portal, coaches calling players that are on rosters because there's no threat of really getting in trouble. And at the end of the day, when you show up, you're the freshman plebe. And, maybe some kids get the big treatment, but for the most part, they just sold you. I mean, that's all they were doing is selling you. They don't care if you are unhappy when you get there. You're stuck. So, at least for the year. So, yeah. My biggest problem with Lincoln Kuehr isn't that he's going to switch. It really isn't. Look, kids make bad decisions. And as I said on today's Daily Delivery video, I'm not here to say that going to Oregon's a bad decision. Maybe committing to K-State early was the bad decision. What I'm upset about is when kids commit and a program reserves a spot specifically for them, and then on signing day flips, because now they've not only backed out on their commitment, they blocked that program from getting another player that they might have wanted who just signed a letter of intent with someone else. And so it nails them twice. And I'm hoping if Lincoln plans on switching, he doesn't do it on Wednesday and make a big fanfare out of it, because I know K-State's got some other tight ends they would like to sign, if not Lincoln, and they'll probably be precluded from doing so because they would have signed with other programs.
Tim Fitzgerald, our guest, aren't we headed toward it just seems like to me the only way we can administer this kind of a system is to go more toward a pro sports model. Contracts and wording and lawyers and all the stuff that happens in professional sports seems like it's going to have to happen in college sports to get some kind of handle on this. Is that the ultimate? Is that the ultimate landing spot?
I fear we're headed into a whole different world that won't be college sports at all. I mean, they'll be college age athletes. I think, and I don't know if this happens in 2 years or 20 years or what the time frame is, I think we're going to end up with semi-pro football, and your school name will be licensed to a business that will run that football program for you. And that's ugly. That's not college sports at all. And I think if that happens, there's going to be a real break-off between the schools that want to do it that way and people who still want to play college sports. And I know everyone at every school wants to play at the highest level possible. But I would offer that basically being a semi-pro sports franchise isn't what you want to be as a college, as a university, and trying to stay maybe at a middle tier, somewhere between whatever they're going to create and the FCS, a more of a college football tier that makes sense for places like most of the Big 12 schools. And that just don't have that kind of budget to go spend millions of dollars on players, which is absurd. What, there's talk of Michigan paying $14 million for a quarterback. We've reached a level of absurdity. People are spending it because they can, and if you've got a filthy rich donor that has no end to their resources, this is the nonsense that's going to go on. And this isn't good for anyone, including the kid that's going to get $14 million. I worry about them because it's not like they have a professional agent and planning, financial planners and all that. A lot of it just gets dumped in their lap, and along with responsibilities, the tax and all that. There's so many horrible layers to this. This is not what anyone signed up in, coaching college sports or even covering college sports, but here we are.
Yeah, so we've talked on this show about K-State basketball being a little bit under the radar. They've not played fantastic. They've not really played poorly, I guess, in their non-conference. Are the next three games against St. John's, Drake, and Wichita State, is that enough to get them some eyes, or will it have to happen if and when they make some waves in the Big 12?
It's funny, when you see the schedule at the start of the season, you don't think that with these three games necessarily. All those programs struggled a little bit last year, and they're not this year as much. And, I mean, yeah, I think Drake's really good. I'll be honest, I haven't followed the Shockers much because I've been deep into football so far, but they're all better than expected, and I think we'll provide Kansas State with some good tests that they need. I talking to the players yesterday after that game, so-called game, against Arkansas Pine Bluff, they believe that even though they didn't win that second game, that they did a lot of bonding and grew together in the islands. And they were playing a really awful team Sunday, but, boy, they looked a lot better just shooting the ball and working with each other. But then again, they were almost playing against air because Arkansas Little Rock, if you put the three of us and two other fat old guys, Jeff, you get to be the young guy, you put us on a court, we would defend better than they did. It was awful. They were a horrible team.
You upgraded them from Pine Bluff to Little Rock, though, so they must have impressed you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Pine Bluff, yes. it's all one state to me. It's just a
same
diff. Stop adding all these schools. I mean, it got really confusing yesterday because Pine Bluff played the men and Central Arkansas played the women. And I'm like, how many damn D1 schools does this state have? It's not that big. So it's very confusing.
All right, my last question. We got to ask you about Avery Johnson. I don't know what letter grade I'd give him for his season. I'm pretty much hovering around the C for pretty much everything except J.R. Giddens.
D.J.
D.J. Giddens. J. Gosh, why do I keep doing
that?
You
do that a lot.
I do that. Yeah. We couldn't sound older. But anyway, where are we with Avery? What does he need to do in these months ahead to improve and get better and come back and lead K-State to a higher purpose next season?
You know what's remarkable about Avery's season? If you just ask most of us observing, we say he underachieved. He wasn't nearly what we expected. And that might be an indictment of our expectations more than Avery, because there's been some people up, a guy on my staff, and I've seen a couple people on Twitter, put together comparisons of like quarterbacks, were through the history of K-State or around FBS football this season. Avery's stats are basically the best among the sophomore quarterbacks. You have some nuance to that. But really the problem was the ill-timed turnovers soured everything. At the end of a game at Houston, at the start of the game at Iowa State, fairly early in the game at BYU, he had such impactful turnovers. There weren't very many mistakes that turned into no big deal. And I think that's what clouds us a little bit. I think he's a much better football player, though, than he showed. Part of that was offensive scheme. Part of that is a reluctance to run the ball because I think some forces around him want him to prove to the NFL he can be a pocket passer. And look, I mean, Lamar Jackson isn't known as a pocket passer. He can do it and do it effectively, but that's not why you draft him. You draft him because he's a freak of an athlete who can do multiple things. And that's the lane Avery needs to be in. But the reality of it is Avery isn't as big as Lamar Jackson. And he took some hits this year, including, you know, at the end of the game in Iowa State. It should have been a personal foul penalty, in my opinion, according to the rule book, but it wasn't. And there's some worry about him being a little bit too fragile for this level.
All right, I'm going to cheat. We got another guest coming up, but D.J. Giddens, I want to ask you quickly about him. Is he just banged up? Is that why he sat out in the fourth quarter the other day? And what might that do to his ability or desire to play in a bowl game?
Yeah, I don't know. They took his helmet from him, so that tells me he took something to the noggin. He was beaten up this year, and I think he's a whale of a running back, but K-State had to lean on him to carry him at times, and his body paid the price. If you're DJ, you might look at the NFL and say, I got to make my money soon because my body can't take this. But I also honestly don't think he's quite ready for that level emotionally or football sense. So we'll see how that plays out. But I really do wish him the best. He's such a terrific kid. He's just a wonderful young man.
Fitz, we really appreciate you, and hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, gentlemen, whatever your names are. Appreciate it.